One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello everyone, welcome to the latest episode of the Red Men Weekly Podcast. I'm Steve Hoare, here to bring you the best clips from our Red Men Plus content from the last week. I always say it, just to let you know again, if you want to listen or watch these shows in their entireties, you've got two ways to do it. Redmenplus.com and sign up from as little as £6.99 a month. There's also yearly discounts available as well. You get all the episodes in video and in podcast forms. You can download them into various podcast apps directly on your device. Or if you're a Spotify user and you only want to use Spotify and you're not bothered about watching videos, you just want to listen to the stuff in Spotify, search Red Men Plus Podcasts in Spotify now. You can pay them directly and you get these into your Spotify feed as well. You won't get access to the videos and the website, but if you just listen on Spotify and that's your thing, then you can do that. So yeah, redmenplus.com if you want to watch and listen in your apps, or Red Men Plus Podcast on Spotify to check these shows out in full. Right then, let's get on with these shows. The first one, the Biased Football Podcast. It's usually a very non-Liverpool-centric show, this one. However, with the news that Phil Coutinho is making a move to play in Qatar, you've got Paul, Chris, Dan and Chloe had a big old chat about the former Liverpool star. Check this out.
Felipe Coutinho continues the development of his career. He's joined Al Duhail on loan, Qatari side Al Duhail on loan for the rest of the season. According to the BBC, the Brazilian midfielder, 31, has made just two substitute appearances for Villa this term after scoring one goal in 22 matches in the previous campaign. His current contract runs out in June 2026.
Jesus.
What have they done that for?
Wow.
Completed a move to Villa from Barca in July 2022. Gerrard at the time hailed him as a brilliant signing for the club.
Yeah. Slipped up there, hasn't he?
I mean, he slipped up when he left Liverpool, to be perfectly honest with you. I absolutely live for this kind of stuff.
You can't be making Stevie G slip jokes, Sam. Not on these couches, mate. Not right.
He thought, obviously, Coutinho coming in, he probably sort of heralded as a bit of a masterstroke at the time. Yeah, remember, he hit the ground with Man United. I think they beat Man United like the first game with him.
Yeah, he came on as a sub and scored.
Yeah. He was brilliant, wasn't he? And you think, I'll tell you what, he's onto something here. But as it turned out, his career has continued to spiral out of control, quite frankly.
He's always flattered to deceive Coutinho.
Do you think?
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Like he always looks better than he is.
Okay.
Like, really? I think even at Liverpool, like, don't get me wrong, I loved him at the time and stuff, but when you look back with the cold, hard eyes, he just missed the target a hell of a lot, and Liverpool could have scored a lot more goals if he wasn't just shooting from 35 yards and taking it all on him.
He had loads of quality, though.
He did have loads of quality.
And he hasn't shown it since.
He was a really good player for a little while, so there was no one else who was capable of winning football matches for us, was the counterpoint. But, you know, we'll never know with him.
I don't think Liverpool would ever hit the heights that they did, even if they kept Phil Coutinho in.
Okay,
In the starting 11. I know the Alisson and the Van Dijk stuff, like, you know what I mean? But I don't think he'd have been a massive part of what we did had he stayed.
I think the hardest thing with this is that Liverpool did the right thing selling him because the money they got for him was stupid. And as you say, if you just say, well, you swapped him for Alisson and Van Dijk and they were the two players, you had Fabinho into the mix maybe, who gave us the foundation to go and be a super side. Beyond being a really good side, a really exciting side, it took Liverpool up to the top, absolute tip top. But it would have been fascinating to see what would have happened because he was on for like a 25 plus goal season that last season. And that's the season where Salah gets 40 goals and Firmino breaks 20 goals, which very rarely happens. And Mane, it was around the 30 points.
when he was trying to play for a move for Barca.
Maybe, but it was also he was on that rise. You know, he was due that.
Where does he fit in the league winning side in the first 11? Where does he fit in the side that won the European Cup in the first 11?
I don't think he gets in the first eleven. You've loaded the question. That's the point. Yeah, in the first 11, it depends on the game, doesn't it? Because where did he fit in the eleven before he left?
He wasn't a very good eight, and he wasn't better than Sadio Mane on the left hand side.
That was the issue. Not the issue. That wasn't the issue at the time because he was brilliant at the time. But when looking back now with the benefit of hindsight, and you see what Jurgen Klopp transformed us into. And sort of that workman-like midfield more as opposed to your flair and your glitz of Philippe Coutinho, then it is hard to see where he fits. But I think with somebody who was that talented and that brilliant during his time with us, you make them players fit. You know, you're right to say, obviously, Sadio Mane, Firmino and Salah go on to do great things and they have this understanding and this gel that you just can't make that up. It's just incredible. And the midfield, similarly, although it doesn't have loads and loads of quality and class in there, it just works. And I don't know where Coutinho fits, so I take your point, but I think he was so incredible. He was a world-class talent.
What was his league tally for most goals in a season? Was it like 12 or 13 or did he get a bit higher than that? Or?
I don't know.
Because we've just talked about Neymar, right, scoring a bar nearly well over a goal a game for some top sides in big competitions. And Phil Coutinho got nowhere near that.
No, he was
nowhere near that. And we were quite disrespectful of what Neymar has done. And yet, for a lad who played for us, I think it was about 12 or 13 goals in a season was his biggest return for us. Like, it's nothing like what we went on to achieve with Mane scoring 20 odd, Salah scoring 40 odd, Bobby Firmino getting around the same numbers that Coutinho was getting, you know what I mean?
But
I don't think it's outlandish to say that Liverpool...
We got better because
we were
left.
Well better.
Yeah, oh, God, yeah. My only counter was that was his season. That was the season
because he was playing for to Barcelona. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, but that was the season he was due. He was on the pathway to being a 20-plus goal a season player for that on that particular season. He got 5 and 5, I think, in the Champions League before leaving. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of hard to unpick because obviously he's got his Barcelona games at the back end. I'll see if I can get it up in terms of his total numbers. But his biggest goal scored in season for Liverpool was 14 goals in all comps.
In all comps.
Yeah, in all comps. 14-36 in the 2016-17 season. He got 12 in 20 in his final half season
before leaving us.
One of those is definitely a fact.
Is that the year that he had back trouble on the plane and all that type of stuff?
I know, think he came back from a back injury, Chris, and got 12 in 20.
To do that.
So he only didn't play half a season. He played a month less than half a season, which is pretty phenomenal return.
Sure.
7-14 in the Premier League he ended on before leaving. So 1-2.
That's the best he ever did.
Yeah. But that was again.
In half a season.
Yeah.
Couldn't even sustain it for a full season.
Well,
I didn't see him as a goal scorer, though, like an out and out goal scorer.
Yeah, no,
that wasn't him. That wasn't
no,
him.
No, I agree.
Yeah, and I don't think, like Sadio Mane obviously is. Firmino wasn't, but Salah was. So
League goals did Mane score that season?
What year was it?
17-18.
Maybe 14?
Nope. 10.
10.
Wow. Yeah. Just more than Phil Coutinho in a full season, despite being miles better than him.
But he did. Phil Coutinho didn't score as many as Mane in the full season. Because he played for the move to Barcelona. I don't know. Let's have a look. So he got 41 and 52 for us. So less than 1 in 3. Again, flattered to deceive. That's all I said.
It's a mad decision from him, isn't it, Chloe? I mean, you consider that he was... And it was Klopp's point about him being... You can stay here and become a legend and you can have statues built to you and all this kind of stuff. And
Salah's got more than that in 1 year.
I know, it's true. Well, that's... Yeah, I mean, Kenny Dalglish is shit, isn't he? Because Salah's got more goals than him. But he did. Look, he made the offer his own back. And that's the thing about Coutinho is... And then Chris ultimately isn't wrong because he could have gone on and done more. Barcelona were a mess that he went to and they just didn't stand all the stuff that Klopp was training out of him, which was let's just shoot from distance every five minutes. But yeah, ultimately that last half a season for Liverpool is the peak of his is literally the peak of his remaining career, and now we're at a point where he's 31. He should be getting that move to Saudi because he's the same age bracket as Mo Salah, and he's the same age bracket as Neymar, and the same age bracket as Kevin De Bruyne, and he was the star in that Liverpool team up until that, well, one of the stars up until that point. And here we are. He's, you know, he's getting loans to. He's not even going to the one, the Middle Eastern league that's got the bottomless pits of cash. It's a sad fall from grace.
No, I think it's beautiful. I don't like him, and the reason I don't like him is it's one thing to go to Barcelona. Look, Liverpool have been a stepping stone for a lot of my life. They were the stepping stone. Xabi Alonso ended up at Real Madrid at a stage. Liverpool aside, you know, even Fernando Torres binned us off for Chelsea. A lot of my life, you know, Liverpool were the stepping stone. It was a case of Luis Suarez. Oh my God, look at how good he was for Liverpool. Look at the stage we put him on. As soon as Arsenal came around the corner, no, I want to leave. Oh no, well, we're not accepting that because it's Arsenal. And then he eventually went for Barcelona. Look, was he better than Liverpool at the time? 100%. Do I think Coutinho was better than what Liverpool were at the time? I'm not too sure I can say that, because I don't think Barca were this supreme. Obviously they are in terms of being Barcelona, but in that moment, you know, they weren't going to go on and win Champions Leagues. And Liverpool, you felt like under Jurgen Klopp, might have something special here. They might be creating something. And he forced his way out. If he would have went gracefully, absolutely fine. But he pretended that he had an injury here and there. He forced his way out of the club. And I hope it haunts him. I really do. Because Jurgen Klopp literally said to you, how much he adored you. And also, if you stay here, they'll sing songs about you. You'll be on a banner. You know that banner that comes across the cop? You'll be on there. You'll have a statue outside if you create history here. You'll be remembered. You will feel loved more than you will be anywhere else. You'll never get the reception, no matter what club. You go to Barcelona, yeah, watch. They've got him. They've got 10 other players who are better than
Messi,
you.
FC.
Yes, you do. But even Sergio Busquets, lauded. Jordi Alba, lauded. You were against, there were players there who were always going to be bigger than Felipe Coutinho would ever be. And at Liverpool, he had the option to make himself, you know, a hero, an icon. He didn't. He forced his way out, and his career has gone absolutely downhill. Yeah, has he won a Champions League? Yes. Did he star in that Bayern Munich team? Absolutely not. He still won things, but I'd really like to interview him and ask him just how much he regrets leaving Liverpool. Because I absolutely live for people who think they're bigger than the football club, and then it turns out you're not.
His issue with regards to the legacy, because I can think of, there's plenty of players who've left Liverpool, Dan, and some of them have gone on. Not many of them have gone on and done more. No. You know, like Suarez is a good example of someone who just continued his upward trajectory. And look, that might have actually been a contributing factor. Alonso is another one who was, you know, he's remembered as being a better player for Liverpool than he actually was. You've got Sterling, who obviously is, but he and Sterling's an interesting comparison. I think they're both very similar because I don't think either of them reached their peak at Liverpool. So we actually didn't really truly get to see the fact that we can have this argument about like what was his best. If he'd stayed for one more year, I think we'd have seen him. He'd have gone on and potentially had that all conquered, and he fulfills his potential. Yeah. Whereas he left without getting to that level. So we've got nice little moments. There's some good goals that he scored. You know, we can all remember the little stand-up Man United in the Europa League. Great goal against Stoke away in 15-16. Was it 16-17? Anyway. But he left us that. So it was like a firework that never went off. Whereas someone like Torres, we got the best of Fernando Torres, and then actually we got like a bit of fun of seeing him fall off there. But at least there was something. Coutinho was just a bit... There'll come a point where you will probably you forget he even played for Liverpool. I kind of have that with Sterling, but in a different way.
No, I agree with that, absolutely, yeah. And it's an interesting one. I really like Coutinho. I thought he was a brilliant footballer. And the fact we sort of, 8 million we signed him for, wasn't it, yeah, Vincent Milan? And you know, to sign someone for that cheap, who obviously hasn't quite worked in Italy for him for whatever reason, all of a sudden you see this lad and you think, tell you what, there's a little bit going on here. He's a little bit special, this. And yeah, he has these flashes of brilliance and inspiration. I remember the goal he scored against Man City as well on the way, well, trying to win the title that year. And he just had that quality within him, and you think, okay, this kid is sort of on the cusp, on the verge of really breaking through that glass ceiling and going, he could be world class, too world class. And you're right, I think he clearly knew that himself. And I think the problem is, and Chloe's writing what she says, and sort of the grass isn't always greener. We've seen that now on multiple different times. And that was definitely the case when it came to Coutinho, of course. But he's also seen different stories like Luis Suarez and other people of that ilk. And I think the issue is, and I, with a heavy heart, I have to say this, but when a lad comes from Brazil, like he does, the law of Barcelona is just too much to resist. And unfortunately, whatever we think of Liverpool Football Club, he doesn't share that same belief to us. To him, rather. To us, it's everything. To him, it's just a football club. And it's just a pathway in his career that he's taken at that moment in time. And you're right. He should have seen what Jurgen Klopp was telling him. And he should have listened. He should have heeded the advice. And he should have seen the project and what Jurgen Klopp was capable of. And he should have gone, you know what? I'm going to stick around here because this could be special. He's been blinded by the fact it's Barcelona. Whatever we think of Barcelona at the time, and they were a mess, it's Barcelona Football Club. And unfortunately, them and Real Madrid, when they come calling, especially for South Americans, there's no stopping it.
Cheers to Paul and the guys for that one. Hope you enjoyed that one. And yeah, good luck to Phil, I suppose, over in Qatar, where you're laying lots and lots of money. Speaking of money, who knows more about football finances, especially in the Merseyside area, than Dave Powell? The answer is not many people at all. The business of football writer for the Liverpool Echo, also on the Bottom Line podcast. He was on to speak to Dan Club on this week's Expert Insight. There's been a lot of talk about FSG, investors, all this kind of stuff. So Dan went on a big old chat about Liverpool and their financial situation with Dave. Check it out.
You mentioned there sort of FSG's future plan for Liverpool, and part of that was the investment surge that we obviously spoken about previously, you and I, and it was reported on the back end of last year. And we haven't really had any major updates on it recently. I think the last I seen was a lot of conversations have been had. You mentioned Mike Gordon's return to the day-to-day. And it feels like now we're in a bit of a holding position on this. Now, I wondered whether they will have sort of sought out their preferred options and those conversations will still be going on. Is this normal practice, Dave? You've been around this industry for a long time. Is the way this has gone very sort of similar to how different deals have sort of unfolded? And also, we've seen what's going on down the road at Manchester United. Is that likely to impact what's going on with Liverpool at all? Because I think a lot of people have sort of put two and two together in that and kind of made 10 out of it, if you like, because suddenly their deal's in jeopardy and people are going, well, they might want to come and invest in Liverpool then. Does that make any sense to you at all?
No, to address the first bit, it's more of a fishing exercise than anything. So when they created a sales deck, I mean, if you want to know the value of a part of a business, you have to know the value of the whole of the business. So it was a bit of a fishing exercise, see what kind of interest there was, how much people would be willing to pay. And they went cold in it quite quickly. It was, I mean, by December time, it was they pivoted right back to wanting a minority stake. But it's a different search for Liverpool. So if you look at the likes of Everton at the moment, they're scrapping around trying to find some way to recapitalize the business, aid cash flow, etc. For FSG, they have access to credit lines. If they wanted just a minority investment just to bring in some money, they could have done that very easily by selling to a passive investment partner, maybe an Arctos or something like that, who they already have on board in FSG. They could have sold a small part of this to some investment fund that would have just said, yeah, here's some capital, you have that, and we'll just wait and ride that train until such time the value of the football club increases, I don't know, to 7 billion or whatever. So that's a perfect, it's a great investment for funds. But for the same, so they can access funds if they want. That's not an issue. Mm-hmm. What they want is someone to come in and where they can partner with and potentially become a rights holder. So whether that's through changes in how broadcast is done, ownership of digital assets and things. So Barcelona right now are trying to, they've sold their media business for, they're valued at $1 billion. So all these things are important to realise that Liverpool's a global brand and FSG want to try and monetize that as best they can. But in terms of who's coming in, I imagine they would have had conversations now and identified with people who they'd be interested in partnering with, who they think can bring them both capital and scale, so they're able to plug them into a whole different matrix of other opportunities and make them almost kind of mini Disneys. So you're adding businesses to the business. Mm-hmm. So that's the plan, I think. In terms of Manchester United, that is important because I think every major Premier League club owner is looking at the Glazers and thinking they're taking one for the team here, because they don't care what fan sentiment is towards them, and they are willing to get under the skin of every single fan by just holding out for the biggest price. While if you're a United supporter, obviously that's it's abhorrent, because they have used the football club like an ATM, personal ATM. They take dividends out. They're the only Premier League owners that take dividends out of the football club. But at the same time, they are holding out for a premium price, which they first said was 6 billion. Now they believe it could be as much as 10 billion. So at a time when we were talking about parcel sales in Liverpool at 4 billion, at Liverpool really at 2 billion, worth 2 billion less than Manchester United? Are they worth 6 billion less than Manchester United? So no one really knows. All these, the valuations of football clubs are a funny one, because people tend to do it on a multiple of revenue. So how much revenue you earn at times X, Y, Z. So in the Premier League for a long time, for among the biggest clubs, it's been a multiple of revenue of about 6 and 7. North American sports are multiple of revenues, 10, 11, 12. So that's where US owners in particular want to get to. They want to kind of get that kind of return. FSG, I'm going to be here forever. It's not, you know, but that their business is value creation. So if they think there's more value to create, and there is in terms of football, if they wanted to buy another football club the size of Liverpool, they'd probably have to pay 6 billion to acquire it. So if they've got one that's at the moment, then it's why would they let it go? So from what I can gather, there's nothing in QIA or Qatar stuff. It's largely the transfer window's closed. There's been rumours about United sale being off, so there's usually an information vacuum that people need to fill for engagement. So that means that John Enriel talks with whoever. So I dare say that the kind of Qatar etc. would love a slice of Liverpool, but these things take long, long time. It doesn't really chime with, I don't see what they bring, even if unless it was a full-scale takeover and John Henry had just decided, no, I'm done with this. And they're going to pay well above the odds. I don't see what they bring in terms of what Liverpool need. So that's the kicker, really. So from my point of view, in terms of what I've heard, I don't think anything on that has really transpired. It's, as you say, it's a bit of a holding pattern at the moment. People are waiting to see what happens with United and the valuation of the market, interest rates, etc., globally. So there's a few factors to consider. So I think it's one of those things that it will take as long as it takes to coin a Mr. Bull from Peppa Pig, which I've been watching this morning. So
nice. I didn't expect to hear that.
People with kids would appreciate the Peppa Pig reference. But yeah, it'll take as long as it takes. It might not even transpire at all. But it's worth remembering that the kind of people say, it was going to be done by end of summer or whatever. I mean, largely FSG don't say much. And they say very little, actually. So the narrative's driven in the media. So it's one of those things. I don't think much has changed. And I don't think from their point of view, if they look back on what they've said, I don't think an awful much would have changed from their initial comments. So, yeah, that's a long-winded way to say there's not much to say.
No, I think that's fair enough, mate. I do. Like I say, I think it's always likely to be a slow process. You want to get the right people on board, because, like I say, these are going to work alongside FSG essentially and look to grow the business together. And you don't want to be bringing in the wrong people essentially. But I do want to ask you about one particular group, and it feels like I always touch on these whenever we speak. And it's Liberty Media again, because I came across their CEO, now forgive me on all of this, Greg Maffei, was a speaker at the Goldman Sachs. Now, this is a word I've never seen before. Communicopia and Technology Conference last week. And he confirmed that Liberty had been approached by various sports outfits and essentially said that they will be looking to invest in any sport around the world. Obviously, we know them from the Formula One stuff and all that, and very proficient in what they do, I think it's fair to say. Now, given everything you've just been talking about there in terms of adding value to the business, you mentioned broadcast, you mentioned Disney, that to me, what they do feels like a good fit.
Yeah, and the links with those, while I don't know, you know, whether conversations have taken place, certainly from the people I've spoken to who kind of au fait with Greg Maffei. They said nothing's been mentioned to them. So it makes sense, that one, in reality. I think you look around, you think of all the investments that they could make, or you think that kind of makes a lot of sense. And there's a lot of alignment there in terms of what Liverpool would seek. A huge business, and they've got, and they're already in the sports market with, like you say, they own F1, and then they also own the Atlanta Braves, I think, baseball team. So there's some competitive element there with FSG and the Red Sox. But if you look at how they've grown Formula One under their ownership through Drive to Survive and the popularity of it, even at a time when we've got the same fella winning every single race, I think is probably a testament to kind of how they've managed to push that forward. So that's an interesting one. It probably is one to watch. Nothing to suggest that's close or anything, but it's one of those that I think has legs, it has merit in terms of its links, because it makes sense from a business standpoint for FSG. And I can understand why they would seek to try and partner with someone like that. Also, they're a huge global company which has scale. So, and to offer Liverpool that kind of insight would be huge, I think. But nothing, to my knowledge, is close to that. But not to say that they aren't. I imagine they are on FSG's radar in a considerable way.
Yeah, definitely. I think the reason I bring it up so much is because, like you say, it does feel like a more sort of sensible fit. It does feel like one that would be sort of all parties would be on board with. Just finally, Dave, before I let you go, Billy Hogan suggested recently Liverpool could return to the US for their pre-season tour next year. Obviously went to Germany and Singapore this time around. In terms of sort of monetary, you mentioned Mohamed Salah and Times Square early on. Like, in terms of the business side of things, a pre-season tour to the US feels like the most valuable. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, Liverpool have a lot of commercial partners which are based in the Far East. So that was, and obviously with the COVID knocking summer tours on the head for a couple of years, they had to play a lot of catch up, because every commercial partner wants some face time. They want some brand recognition with Liverpool when they come over. So that's understandable. And Liverpool have a huge fan base in those regions. So those fans want to see the Reds. So, but in terms of the US, yeah, there's a push for that because the US have now come on board as a major market which is interested in football. I mean, not only the Premier League, but football as a whole. I mean, they're interested in their domestic league through the fact that Lionel Messi now plays for Inter Miami. So that goes some way to help him. But, yeah, I mean, you've also got to remember that the World Cup in America's 2026. So clubs will start trying to position themselves now to tap into that fandom that is kind of existing in the US, especially at a time when the country's building towards the World Cup. So yeah, I think that's where they end up next summer. I think I'd be very, very surprised if they didn't. Quite where they do it, I'm not sure whether it's, I think there's a good chance that it could be West Coast maybe. That might make some sense. I think they did East Coast last time around, and then they did New York, yeah. Boston, South Bend. Potentially they look towards LA, San Francisco and things. I don't know. I mean, this is me using my kind of guessing at here, but it seems to chime into what might happen as of next year. But I find it hard to believe they won't go to the US next year. And for commercial reasons, it would make a lot of sense.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Thanks to Dan and thanks to Dave for that one. Sticking with Dan then for another expert insight. This time it was with Matt Addison, the Liverpool.com editor. He's an expert, basically, as Matt, in Liverpool's under-21s and their 18s as well. And yet Dan had a big old chat about the next generation of Liverpool stars. Have a listen to this.
You touched on Jarrell Quanta there a couple of times, and I'm really intrigued by Jarrell Quanta, not only due to the fact that I spoke to somebody from Bristol Rovers a long time ago who spoke really highly of him and really sort of backed him to make it at Liverpool. I don't think anybody quite expected him to have the rise or the role that he's had so far this season. What have you made of that? And have you been equally surprised by the fact that he's suddenly thrust into the first team squad? And it feels like I don't want to say a permanent fixture there now, but he's certainly a permanent fixture until January, it feels like, anyway.
Yeah, I think he will get opportunities. Like I say, I mean, there's not loads of centre-backs. Liverpool have left themselves short in terms of senior options because they didn't do anything in the summer in terms of bringing somebody in. So they've obviously got a level of trust with him. I think he's, you know, been cool and calm and composed, which is always a good thing. That's the biggest thing for me, really, is when you have a defender and you throw them in, you don't want them to be doing anything rash or doing anything different to what they would normally do. He seems to have the temperament to do that. I think that's something we've kind of always seen with him for the last couple of years, probably 18 months, 2 years ago. I remember I spoke to him before an FA Youth Cup semi-final. He was the captain of that age group. He was obviously a leader. He was someone that, you know, was obviously comfortable to step up, and he must have been, what, 17, 18 at the time, but he was, you know, he came across really well in that interview. And you know, that's the kind of character I think that you need to be. You need to be a leader. You need to be sort of confident in your own game, obviously keeping things fairly simple and fairly basic, but that's what he's done. And I think the more he can maybe come off the bench for the last 10 minutes, the more he'll be able to grow into that role. And he is definitely an option. He surprised me in as much as I think probably another loan would have been what I would have expected at the start of the summer. I also thought Luke Chambers might be a little bit further ahead of him in terms of the pecking order. I'm a big fan of him. Again, another one similar to Bobby Clark, who's excelled over the last few years with England's youth groups and has come through. Again, can sort of play full-back and centre-back, so you think would fit perfectly in the way that Liverpool are trying to play. But between the two of them, there is definitely a lot of quality there. We've not obviously seen loads of Chambers. There was the reports over the summer that, you know, Bayer Leverkusen might be interested in him. Possibly a loan could have happened, but didn't. I think it'll be interesting to see the next steps for both of them. I'm not 100% sure in terms of the injury situation with Chambers. Maybe there's been, you know, a couple of little problems over the summer, and that's why we've not seen loads of him. But I think between the two of those two, there's definitely, you know, something long term in it for Liverpool. Obviously, they fit the system, but, you know, more important than that, they're both very, very good footballers. And I think for Jarrell, the next step really would be to try and get some starts. I think he's shown now that he's capable of coming off the bench, and, you know, at home against some lesser opposition in Europe, it would be, you know, still a big step for him. It would still be a big ask and very different to playing in League One. But I don't think any of us would be concerned by it or massively worried by it. If you saw his name on the team sheet, I think more than anything, you'd probably be excited.
No, I agree. Yeah, and as you say, he's taken it in his stride so far, given the fact he got a handful of games at the back end of last season in League One, to suddenly be sort of thrust into the limelight, 10 men away at St. James' Park. He handled himself brilliantly. And as you say there, his temperament is sort of akin to that as well. So I don't think anyone, certainly me, would be overly concerned if he was starting games. And as you kind of alluded to, you're never too far away from starting games at centre-back for Liverpool at the minute. So it might well happen, unfortunately. Certainly when we're getting red cards every other week by by all the sounds of it as well. The main crux of the episode that I wanted to touch upon was Liverpool's youth policy and the change in it. Obviously, Brexit enforced much of this change, and Liverpool have gone down a new pathway. It's been much spoken about, it's been much deliberated on, and we continued it this summer as well. Now, some of the names we've spoken about already so far, Ben Doke, Bobby Clark and his others, there's Kate Gordon, Trent Cohn-Doherty, Callum Scanlon, and many more, have been players that we've snapped up from British clubs, essentially, over in Ireland, a couple of them as well. And we've kind of identified them as top talent in different academies. We brought them into our own and tried to continue their development with us and stuff like that. And I suppose before we go on to the new lads, I wanted to touch on how successful do you think that policy's been so far in that new strategy? Because not every club's doing it. Liverpool, in my opinion, very much at the forefront of it. Is it working? Do you see a benefit in it? Obviously, the first team are benefiting from it when you look at Ben Doke and Bobby Clark in particular. But the academy itself, is the quality of the academy side raising, and therefore is the training levels raising? Has this been a success, would you say?
I'd say it's been a big success for Liverpool. I mean, you always want to try and cut corners or save money or, you know, try and find the next best thing before you have to pay the big money. And there's been a lot of criticism when you look at what Brighton have done over the summer with, you know, Moises Caicedo, for example. They bought him for a very small fee and have sold him for big money. Loads of other examples as well. And people always say, why don't Liverpool do that? Why couldn't Liverpool go to South America, buy Moises Caicedo, put him in the team? And, you know, the obvious reason for that is that he wouldn't have been ready to come in and play the regular minutes as he has for Brighton. He wouldn't have got that development. But I think at youth level, it's obviously slightly different. It's still, you know, a big step, I'm sure, to go from, say, a Derby County academy for someone like Kate Gordon to come in and play for Liverpool regularly. It's a different environment. The expectations are different. He obviously was getting minutes at, you know, 15, 16 at Derby, where that isn't probably going to be the case at Liverpool. Had to wait a little bit longer and be a bit more patient. But it's almost the same process, I think, for me. You're looking for the next big thing before it happens. And I think for me, it's already started to pay off because, now imagine, for example, that Liverpool had waited a couple of years before they looked at Harvey Elliott. You know, how much would he have cost then compared to what he cost? Even just that saving alone would make it a huge amount of money for Liverpool, I think. So if you can do that, you know, once every couple of years, for example, you're saving yourself suddenly a huge amount of money. I can understand that the opposite point might be that, you know, it maybe blocks the path of certain other players who are coming through the academy or things like that. But I just think if you get the opportunity for, you know, a Bobby Clark, for example, to be signed one of the top probably two or three talents of his age in the country, of course you're going to go and do that. And it was an opportunistic one. If he was still at Newcastle now, would he leave? Perhaps not. Maybe he would look at Newcastle in a different way. But obviously at the time, Liverpool were able to do that deal, bring him across. And I think within the next couple of years, we'll see, you know, the benefit of that. Kate Gordon, again, is one still to keep an eye on. And ultimately, you know, as much as we want all of these players to do well, the worst case scenario is that you can kind of do what Chelsea do, where they stockpile all of these young kids, suddenly make a load of money. And, you know, worst case scenario for someone like Bobby Clark is that, you know, he doesn't quite make it at Liverpool's level, but probably will make it somewhere else in the Premier League. And, you know, look at the money that Manchester City have got for players that, you know, most people wouldn't have even heard of. Romeo Lavia, for example, last summer, they got £14 million for a player that had never played at, you know, in the Premier League or whatever. He was very, very young. But that's £14 million that they can then spend on somebody else. So I think it just makes a lot of sense. And I think a lot of people are very quick to jump on Liverpool for not doing this kind of thing in other areas, and maybe less quick to point out that actually they do this in their own way, in a way that suits them a lot better and probably will work out for them in the long term.
No, 100%. I didn't really even consider sort of the knock-on effect it has when you are selling them, because you're right, sort of reference Man City. They did it this summer with James Trafford, I think, the goalkeeper as well, went to Burnley for around 20 million or something like that. Anything that's with all due respect to James Trafford, that's money for old rope when it comes to Manchester City. Like, that FFP bump that you're giving yourself via that, and it's something Liverpool were good at a few years ago and something we need to get back at. Like, we sold Rian Brewster for good money. Obviously, Dominic Solanke was another one. They were a little bit older in terms of their development and stuff like that. But Solanke obviously brought him for free, I think, for Chelsea. And we sold him for around $20 million. And we do need to get better at selling to allow ourselves to do more in the market in terms of incoming. So, yeah, it's a really good point. And, yeah, like I say, if one or two of them, Bendo, Bobby Clark, potentially can actually make it for Liverpool, you know, even better. But I think, yeah, moreover, the academy being stronger helps others develop as well around them. And then whatever you can make on the backside of it, even better. In terms of the two new lads, I think it's Amara Nalo and Trey Anyonyi signed this summer. Have you seen anything of them at all? I know Trey Anyonyi scored a hat-trick in a 10-0 friendly win. That's not a bad way to introduce yourself.
Yeah, I've not seen either of them yet, but obviously I'd seen that he scored the hat-trick, and you know, I think he's, you know, again, one of the top talents, a player that Liverpool really happy to get over the line and bring in. It's just a case of, you know, almost as bad as it sounds, you bring in enough of these lads, then one of them's probably going to make it. They're not all going to make it, but if you bring in 10 of the best rated academy youngsters, probably, you know, there's a good chance that someone somewhere will pay off in some form. So I think it's promising, really. Liverpool are continuing to do this. I noticed there was some quotes that resurfaced from Evan Ferguson. I think they were from an interview from about 12 months ago, where he kind of said, well, you know, why would I have picked Liverpool when, you know, the pathway isn't there, the opportunities aren't there. I might have played in the 23s for a couple of years and not really got anywhere. And, you know, I don't think that would have been true. I don't think that was true at the time, and hasn't obviously proven to be true since. But it's clear that, you know, these young players and the parents and the families are looking at Liverpool still as a place where you can develop, you're at a top club, but you can still make it and take that next step. So, you know, that's crucial, really. That pathway of, you know, Harvey Elliott has done it, Bobby Clark is maybe the next one to do it, and these young lads will be looking at those and thinking, well, you know, in what was it, maybe 6 months after Cade Gordon signed, he was going on a first trip, first team trip for pre-season. I'm sure these lads are looking at that as well. And yeah, it can only be a good thing, can't it? They've both seemingly made good starts, and yeah, a hat-trick in one of your first matches for Liverpool is, you know, a dream, I think, for any player.
Thanks to Dan and thanks to Matt for that one. Moving on, it's time for JNO Insight. Neil Jones back from his little summer holiday there. So JNO Insight was a bit later in the week than usual. We had a really good question sent in by one of our Discord users, all about Jörg Schmadtke, about Liverpool's plans of sporting directors going forwards. We had a chat about Michael Edwards and Ian Graham working for an opposite consultancy company. So yeah, here's what Neil rather had to say on today's JNO Insight. Right then, one final Discord question. This one comes from Red Assassin 210, nice username there. When does Neil think Liverpool will have the whole sporting director saga done and dusted? And does he have any idea if Jörg is actually seen favourably inside the club? Now, there were some rumours around Julian Ward bopping around this week, and there was Michael Edwards has now got this new consultancy firm on the go with Ian Graham doing the obviously excellent Liverpool
thing. Great story.
Really good, good scoopage by them. Do you have any idea of where we're up to? Obviously, Schmadtke's still involved. He was on a short-term deal, but it wasn't like 2 weeks. He's still there for a while yet. But do you know any update on any of that kind of stuff?
Not really, no. I mean, I think they'll look back. I think obviously it's a really testing window, but I think Liverpool will look back on this window quite favourably.
Yeah.
In terms of what got done, you know, not everything was perfect, and there were some moments where it felt like the world was falling apart, but I think Liverpool look and say, you know, considering everything, they got a decent job. You know, they kept hold of all the players they wanted to keep hold of. They got good money for a couple of players who wanted to leave, who were aging, and they've got in three good young players and an experienced sort of senior pro. I think they'll look at it and say, you know what, not a bad window that. So I don't see why Schmadtke would not be seen favourably. What I spoke to people about him said, you know, he's very much of the Klopp type, in that he's, you know, he's straight to the point, sort of real kind of guy. You know, no nonsense, no sort of management speak. He's, you know, he's very informal, if you like, in the way that he deals with things, and he'd rather just have a conversation and not sort of process sort of sit down and, you know, do this. I think obviously they've set a high bar really in the past, haven't they, Liverpool, with the way that they've dealt and the slickness of the operation, really, especially with Michael Edwards and subsequently with Julian. So I think I don't see why there would be a sort of a huge rush to get him out of there. It might be from his point of view. Maybe he thinks that was 3 months of my life that was pretty stressful. I could imagine he would at times with, you know, Caicedo and with Salah and some of the things Henderson, Lavia, yeah, all those things that have been going on. But yeah, I don't really see why it would be such a negative sort of feeling on either side, really, and we'll see. It's not, I mean, Jorg's said himself, hasn't he? It's not a 3 month contract. It was a sort of a contract with the idea that we'll review it in 3 months and have a look at it. I'd be interested to see. I'd be interested to be a fly on the wall in that meeting because, you know, Liverpool probably aren't too far away, are they? I know they've got some big decisions coming up with Salah. They've got Trent's contract and things like that, but I don't think they're too far away from having a really good side. And it's almost like, well, if they can have another window like that one, maybe getting a centre back in, maybe getting a right back in, you could start to look at Liverpool and say that's a pretty good squad that they've built, isn't it? And I wonder whether they might feel a carry on and do what they did in this window, albeit by the seat of the pants at sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, just favour, stop buying all our players off, isn't it?
Yeah.
Let us box it all up.
Yeah, let's have like till next summer at least.
I do think, I don't know if you agree, like the Gravenberch one kind of tipped the scales a little bit. I think up to that point everyone was a little bit like, oh, it's been all right, you know, McAllister's like good, Endo, don't really know, we probably won short, and then you get the Gravenberch one done. And now what's interesting is if when they found out that might be a thing, because they left it very late, obviously, and I wonder, was there a plan B if it wasn't grabbing? But there's all those kind of things, I suppose. Looking back on it now, everyone's quite happy in general. Probably, like I say, I think everyone wanted a defender.
I think everyone's probably one short.
Yeah. But I think if it hadn't been for the Gravenberch deal, everyone would have been like, that was the bare minimum, really.
Yeah.
Wonder that even in, I don't know how involved Schmadke was in that deal anyway, but it is one where it feels like it's tipped the balance towards a more positive mood around it all, I guess.
Yeah, and they've still got similar people in, you know, obviously Barry Hunter, for example, was heavily involved in Gravenberch.
Met his dad, didn't he?
Yeah, Dave Fallows, you know, who's still there. They're heavily involved in that, and there's still people in there who do a lot of that behind the scenes work. And it was a point made to me in the past, you know, under both Michael Edwards and Julian Ward, that they get the sort of the kudos for all of the, you know, the signings. He said they're not always sort of the driving force behind it. They're the ones who maybe decide where to send people, or, you know, right, okay, I'll go and make the pitch to Mike Gordon about whether we need this player or how much we can sort of afford to pay. But there's a lot of other people at the club who, you know, I mean, Ian Graham was another one, wasn't he, that became a sort of a known figure. But there are a lot of other people who are still in position at the club, scouting, recruitment, networking with agents and parents and all these other people who are still playing a similar part. It's not all on Schmadke to get the deal done. It's not all on Klopp to sort of convince the player. The work is done beyond that. But I think if you look at the deals that Liverpool have got done, you know, they got two players on release clauses. I think we can safely say they're good deals. Yeah. I think we're very happy. We're very happy with those two deals. I think Gravenberch at the price, I think, is a good signing. I don't see much downside in the Gravenberch sign, and I think he's at the very least going to retain his value or retain some sort of value, and at best he could go on and become a really, really good player for Liverpool. Endo is a strange signing, but I quite like Liverpool's sort of, what's the word, sort of commitment to the, almost not worrying about the PR of it. You know, it would be easy. We've seen Manchester United do it quite a lot, where it's almost like, oh God, we need to go make a big statement sign and sort of get people, you know, on board. It's a very left field signing, wasn't it? You know, whether the player turns out to be good enough or not, but it shows a sort of a courage of conviction from Liverpool, doesn't it? That actually, do you know what? We think he's the best option out there for us, and then we're going to go and do this with Gravenberch or whatever. I quite admire that about it, and it does suggest that there's still a degree of joined up thinking in Liverpool, that they didn't just go, oh God, we've got 110 million on the Caicedo money, just go and get, bah, let's just throw it at this 28, 29 year old and sort of hope for the best. It suggests there's still a degree of strategy about it, or a degree of, you know, pragmatism at play. And then obviously Ennen and Gravenberch late in the window. I think the one black mark on it would be the defensive situation. I still think Liverpool left themselves in a situation that they're in now, aren't they, with defensive injuries and suspensions. But that sort of has always been their way a little bit, hasn't it? They've always edged towards the one too few as the one too many, haven't they? And you know, we'll see how it turns out. I hope it doesn't come and bite them as it has in the past with other issues. But I think that's the only thing that you would look at this window and say, what were they doing really there? I think they probably should have been bringing in a centre back and probably getting rid of one.
Absolutely, yeah. We spoke about David O'Mahony earlier. It was a week ago now that David Ornstein reported about Michael Edwards' return to football with the advisory firm Ludonautics, I think you pronounce it. That's Ian Graham's advisory service, they're called. Work with football clubs to, you know, help them out with their strategies, data, that kind of stuff. From a Liverpool point of view, this is the first really where people have left and they're going to help other clubs, like straight away. Michael Edwards was on a bit of a leave break.
Yeah.
Ian Graham was setting this, Julian Ward is still out of football. Do you think there's any concern at all with Liverpool now that
they lose the edge?
Not only losing the edge, but like just the amount of knowledge about the, not just Liverpool, but the type of players they want and who you can get and the contacts. Now they're actively going to be working for rivals, because that hasn't been the case really. These guys have left, but they've been on the holidays, they've been on garden leave or whatever they've been doing. Now they're actively back in it, and again potentially helping other football clubs, whether it's advisory or whatever. There must be a little bit of concern at the Axe going, you know, it's almost like, you know, the guys who know your secrets are now working somewhere else.
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean,
I'm actually, the edge is the main thing. They've lost that.
They have a little bit. I mean, I'm just thinking what have Liverpool done that you just think nobody else could possibly have done, you know, in that time. I mean, they've done it smoothly and they've been able to react, and the knowledge of agents and contract situations with people like Diaz. But there's no secrets in football. Liverpool, there's nobody Liverpool have signed that we'd never ever heard of. Probably Endo is the one, you know, that most people had gone, who, you know, and even he was well known in Germany, and obviously, you know, he's a captain of Japan, so it's not like
it's
not, so I don't think you need
not
to
Brighton
be saying
that.
I think Brighton would be a good example. It's not like Liverpool have been doing what Brighton have been doing and picking up players from Venezuela and Ecuador and South America, where you go, oh god, and the guy who's behind that has left. They've lost accomplished executives and accomplished football people and people who've had great success in there, and that of course that has an impact. But there's no, I think it's, the transfer market's pretty standard across the board, and you know, how many times have we seen people, how many times are we talking about managers or scouts or directors of football, and every time they do an interview they'll say, oh, we could have had Erling Haaland when he was 14, or we could have had Luis Diaz, you know, when just when he was sort of coming through at his youth club in Colombia. You know, they all know about everything. They've got their spies, they've got their tentacles across the world, especially at the Premier League level. So I don't think there's that element to it that Liverpool are going to suddenly not be able to find players, or other clubs are going to find players that Liverpool were looking at. But yeah, I think the bigger issue is probably just the amount of, I heard it described, and it was described as, please don't call it this, but the fact that it was please don't call it this suggested there is an element of it, the brain drain at Liverpool with players, people, sorry, leaving in key positions, and people with huge experience, not just of football and the transfer market, but of Liverpool, what Liverpool are after and what Liverpool can do and the parameters. But listen, I think the idea that, you know, Manchester City would go to Michael Edwards and say, right, tell us what Liverpool were doing, or tell us what Liverpool's model was, I don't think it'll be like that at all.
They probably already know.
Well, they probably already know, yeah. I mean, Liverpool obviously took a few people from Manchester City back in the day, didn't they, and used them to build, you know, what they built subsequently. I've just mentioned a few of them. So I don't think it's going to be along that. But yeah, I think what it maybe hints at is just the sort of the competitiveness around the transfer market, that everyone's looking for the same thing, aren't they? They're all, you know, you're seeing it now, aren't you? You're seeing all of a sudden Chelsea are really going for the younger market, aren't they? They're not doing the sort of the 28, 29 year old established pros. I'm pretty sure United will keep going down that road, and I don't you know, you can never be sure, but I don't expect them to be sort of in that, let's get a 31 year old in for a couple of seasons and pay him big money, let's actually get in a Rasmus Højlund or people like that. you're seeing that competitive element that they're all trying to sort of get that edge earlier and earlier and earlier and do that. And, you know, I think Liverpool already knew that, to be perfectly honest. I think they've already seen it, haven't they? You've seen clubs like Newcastle emerge with new money. You've seen Brighton, obviously, what they're doing. Tottenham seems to have done pretty well this summer, don't they, in you know, their recruitments and selling a big player and investing that money well. So I don't think it's sort of... It doesn't need to be any more concerning than it already is for Liverpool to have someone like Michael Edwards there. And listen, if Liverpool are using him and tapping him into it, then at least they probably know his information's good, isn't it? And his advice is good.
Hey, everyone, hope you enjoyed that clip from Journal Insights. If you want to check out the whole show, we had injury updates on Darwin Nunez, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Ibu Konate, a little bit of talk about Thiago on a possible transfer, a little bit about Andre as well. Check it all out over on redmenplus.com. Sign up from as little as £6.99 a month to get that show and everything else we do each and every month. And yeah, if you sign up on a yearly deal, you'll even get yourself a bit of discount as well. Redmenplus.com. I'll see you over there. Yep, thanks Daniil for coming in for that one here each and every week. Really, really good show. Hope you guys enjoyed that one. Finally, Liverpool are playing Wolves this weekend, if you wasn't aware of that one. The Reds are back after the international break. Who'll be in the Liverpool lineup? We don't really know yet. Still waiting for a little bit more news on that one. But ahead of the game, I was delighted to be joined by Dave from the Talking Wolves channel for the Oppo preview. Here's what Dave had to say about his team, Wolverhampton Wanderers.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Red Men TV. It's time for another opposition preview. This time, it's ahead of Liverpool's clash at Molyneux against Wolves this weekend. Delighted to say I'm joined by Dave from the Talking Wolves fan channel. Dave, yeah, your club is absolutely fascinating to me. I've been doing a little bit of reading and writing, I've been reading and watching this morning. And as summers go at a football club, like the change and the overhaul at Wolves in one summer, it's just been absolutely huge. I was looking, you know, Jimenez, Neves, Podence, Moutinho goes, Nunes has obviously gone a little bit later, a change of manager on the eve of the season. Is it as chaotic as it appears from the outside?
Yes and no. I mean, thankfully, there were a lot of, you know, the big aspects sort of happened a lot earlier than expected, or at least Wolves were expecting them to happen. I mean, the big one is obviously Lopetegui leaving right before the season started. The reason that came about was because the club sort of publicly said that they were in financial trouble right at the end of last season. Lopetegui had a little bit of a wobble about it, and it took him a while to sort of, you know, carry on or confirm he was going to carry on as Wolves manager. Got to about, you know, June, he said, yeah, I'll carry on. And then throughout pre-season, I don't know whether he's misunderstood what's been said or the club have miscommunicated to him what the plan was. But I think it was our penultimate friendly. He just said, look, I don't want to carry on as Wolves manager. I'll stay for the next week or so, but you feel free to find a new manager. And that's what happened. Obviously, we'd interviewed a few people, but Gary O'Neill was the man that Wolves chose. Got to say at the time, a little bit underwhelming, and still obviously he's got to do a lot to prove the doubters wrong. But yeah, never ideal when the club are in, you know, it wasn't a great season last year anyway, when the club are in such a strange position, and then for that to happen, and then like you say, to lose so many influential players, Jimenez, Neves, Nunes was the later one. It's going to be an interesting season. I'm confident that our squad is strong enough to do the business this year, but yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting, and rightly or wrongly, you know, a lot of neutrals writing Wolves off already, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, usually if a club loses their manager in the summer, it's usually at the end of a season. And then you've got a bit, you know, the new guy can come in and he can put his stamp on the team. Now, yeah. I know Gary O'Neill's been, you know, and Wolves in particular, been hampered by a bit of financial irregularities as well, and up against it with FFP and stuff. But I suppose, I mean, again, looking at from me looking in, like, Lopetegui's did he sell you down the river a little bit? Because if he just said at the end of last season, I'm going, then the new guy gets to come in early doors. He has a proper full pre-season. Gary O'Neill turns, was it like a few days almost before the start of the season? And then before you know it, another player's going. Like, it just feels like like you said, miscommunication, whatever. But is there any anger towards Lopetegui from Wolves fans? Because it does feel a little bit like, if you were going to go, like, why didn't you go?
No, I agree. It's a little bit mixed, to be honest, because I was disappointed with how he handled it from his point of view. Look, there's a lot of negativity towards the board in general and the club in general, because ever since the year we came to the Premier League, we had a phenomenal transfer window and really set our foundations down to become I would say, a really decent Premier League team. You know, we got back-to-back seventh place finishes. But ever since we got into the Europa League, I think the club got very lazy in terms of recruitment, and that's just never improved. So there's still a lot of anger towards the board and how things have gone. So there are some people that know it's the board's fault, it's the club's fault. But I was still very disappointed with how Lopetegui handled it. I think if he was still unsure, he should have just said at the end of the season, look, I've done my job, I've kept you in the Premier League. He sort of almost proved to the rest of the Premier League, look, I can manage in this division and do a good job. And now, you know, he's still living in and around Wolverhampton. It's really strange. You know, there's pictures of him still locally because his next job, he wants to be in the Premier League again. So he's staying in England. So I don't know who that will be with, or if there's quite a big club that will lose their manager fairly soon. But yeah, for me, I was disappointed. I can completely understand why people would vent some anger towards the club, but I still think Lopetegui could have dealt with it in a much better way.
So it makes sense to me. Let's talk about the season. I say Gary O'Neill comes in. It's a tough job. He himself probably harshly sacked from his last club, and he gets the right when he comes into Wolves. I think I heard him say himself, he was on holiday when the phone call gets made. He wasn't, you know, you're not expecting to become a manager like a week before the season. Looking at what's happened this season, obviously opened at Man United where he's got done by a ref, beat Everton, which I don't know if that's an achievement or not. Maybe, I don't know. But obviously a couple of losses, I mean, a pretty hefty defeat to Brighton, 3-2 against Palace, but I mean, it was a very late goal that got you back that second one. How have you found the season so far? Because like I say, turmoil off the pitch often results in turmoil on the pitch, and I don't know if that's been a reason for it, but I mean, there's been a lot of goals conceded. It's been up and down, is that fair to say?
Yeah, it's just been all over the place. I think we all went into that game at Old Trafford on the opening day thinking, all right, we're going to get done here because obviously everything that was happening off the pitch. And we would say that's our best performance so far this season. I know we lost, but if anybody saw it, you saw how dominant we were. We gave United a really good game. We should have had that late penalty. So we could be having a completely different conversation if that was given. So yeah, to lose that. And then the game against Brighton was frustrating because I know we lost 4-1, but we actually didn't play that bad. There was just a 10-minute spell at the start of the second half where we just fell apart and they scored 3 goals and killed the game off. But there were chances in the first half where we probably should have gone in at halftime winning that game. Obviously getting the win against Everton. But then the Palace game more recently was probably our poorest performance, to be fair. We were really, really poor in that game. So it's just all over the place at the moment. But, you know, there's a lot of, like I said earlier, there's a lot of doubt towards Gary O'Neill, because I think if you asked any Wolves fan or any Premier League fan in general, who do you want to be manager, the next manager of your club, nobody would have said Gary O'Neill. So I said earlier last week, I said this next 2 weeks international break is huge for him, because I know it's early, but it could be make or break for him and his Wolves career, because, you know, if he can have a really good time away from the Premier League football, get his ideas into the players, get them playing and you know, doing well, you know, he could kick on and have a good season. But if not, and it's a disaster, then he might not be Wolves manager for much longer, because we've got, again, a really tough month coming up.
Yeah, I was going to say, we'll look ahead to the game in a moment. This time last year, well, Liverpool went to Wolves later on the season and got absolutely played off the park, got battered. It does feel like a lot has changed for both clubs since then as well. I mentioned before, Neves, Moutinho, Podence, him, like some players who were like staples. You know, if you asked a lot of Liverpool fans the names from Wolves players, they might have been the 3 or 4 names that got rattled off straight away. Since then, of course, there's been a couple of transfers, but not too much. You know, obviously Cunha's deal gets made into a permanent deal. That's probably the biggest deal of the summer. Obviously, that was agreed when the loan happened. It is a much changed Wolves side, isn't it? You know, Lamina and Gomez and Sarabia, it does feel, is it still a bit of a bedding in process? Because it doesn't look like the familiar Wolves size that we've played against for the last few years, really.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I think those players that you mentioned earlier, they're almost like the poster boys of Wolves in the Premier League so far, a lot of the Portuguese boys and, you know, the lads that we'd signed. So it is definitely a huge change. And I think it's frustrating for us as Wolves fans, because this is probably the fourth season running where we've almost had a transitional period, because Nuno did well in the Europa League and the next season he wanted to change everything during COVID and it didn't quite work out. He moved on. So we had Bruno Lage come in and he wanted to change everything. That didn't work out. And then, you know, Lopetegui came in. That was another transitional one. And then we're into a new season now. So as Wolves fans, it is frustrating because we just want some stability, but it is change for us. You know, we've got plenty of, I know there were players that you mentioned there. Podence wasn't getting in the squad though. Jimenez wasn't, Moutinho wasn't. So naturally it probably was time for them to move on. But you know, we've got a new influx of young, hungry, talented players, and it's just up to Gary O'Neill. Can he get these players to settle down and work together as a group? Because genuinely, I think talent-wise, we have got a really talented squad, but it's just trying to find a head coach to get the ideas and the plan together.
Absolutely. I'm just looking at that Palace team then. It was more like it was kind of like 4-4-2-ish, I suppose. Like really, Altnori, Kilman, Dawson, Semedo, Neto, Lamina, Gomez, Sarabia, Silva, Cunha, obviously Jose Sarr in goal as well. Is that pretty much the 11 that you'd expect Liverpool to be facing at the weekend? Could you imagine any changes? I mean, maybe I know Hwang's been in and around the first team a little bit as well, but is there anything, you know, as a Liverpool supporter, should that be the 11 we're expecting to face?
It'll be close to that, I think. I think the back four and the goalkeeper will definitely be the same. I think Lamina and Gomez will probably keep their place. It'll be interesting to see how O'Neill lines up, though, if there are any changes. I think Fabio Silva, for me, it's coming, but we just don't know when. You know, he didn't have his best game against Crystal Palace, but then at the same time, he scored, I think, 3 goals and 2 assists in 2 games for Portugal 21s. So he might get a chance, but then there's players like Sasha Kalajic, the big 6'7" lad who scored the winner against Everton, who has been with Gary O'Neill for 2 weeks, so he may get the nod. And then there's other players that we signed quite late, a guy called Bellegarde from France, who's a really talented player, I think came from Strasbourg, and he got about 4 goal contributions in his first 2 games. So there's players that are in form and got momentum, but we know with Liverpool it's going to be a really, really tricky game. Is he going to go more reserved? Are we going to try a different shape? Because so far what we've seen hasn't quite worked. But I think the core of that squad will probably be the same, but we might see 1 or 2 changes.
Thanks very much to Dave. Hopefully his team get beat, but I really appreciate him coming on the show. And thanks all you guys for listening. Like I say, they are just some of the shows we have available for you on Redmen Plus. There's plenty more over there, including all of our draft series, all of our Dream Team series, tons of documentaries, features, interviews, loads and loads and loads. So yeah, if you want to check them out in full, like I say, RedmenPlus.com is the place to go, or search Redmen Plus podcasts in your Spotify app and sign up through there as well. Hope you all have an enjoyable weekend. Hopefully Liverpool get the business done against Wolves, and we'll be back next week with another Red Men Weekly. Take care, and I'll see you all then.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.